Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, kid-lit notables, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. I'm an elementary school librarian, author of the Busy Librarian blog, and your host. And today, I'm bringing you something a little different. On Facebook this week, a message popped up, an episode actually popped up, of a brand new podcast that a friend of mine shared. Kat Ye shared this episode of Play Memory, a new podcast by Julie Sternberg, who is an author that you know from such books as Like Pickle Juice on a Cookie, Like Bug Juice on a Burger. She also has a Celie Valentine series as well. And she started a new podcast called Play Memory. And the episode in particular that was being shared with me was episode 2 with Michael Buckley. I was no sooner than, I don't know, 5 minutes into this episode with Michael, and I immediately knew that I was listening to something really, really special. So I subscribed to the podcast, went back and listened to episode 1, and in episode 1, Julie talks all about secrets and the way that she's approaching her podcast, which is to say that she wants to have real conversations with colleagues in children's publishing about the secrets behind the stories, but also the secrets behind our lives, what our childhood was like, what is the story behind the story, as it were. And I find it to be incredibly exposing and raw and vulnerable, and it's something that's really incredible, something that I sort of can't stop thinking about, can't stop talking about. So I reached out to Julie and asked permission to share her first episode with all of you, and she was kind enough to grant me permission. So today, on this special episode of Let's Get Busy, I present to you episode 1 of Play Memory, Secrets Within Secrets. And in a minute, you'll hear Julie's theme music start up, and you'll hear her episode, which is approximately 30 minutes long, from start to finish. And I'll come on in the end just to say thanks, and to let you know that Julie's going to come back on the podcast soon to talk about one of her upcoming novels, but I was so excited to hear content being created in the way that Julie is doing it, that feels new and feels like it's offering a new perspective. I hope that it resonates with you the way that it does with me. And when you go ahead and listen to episode 2, I think you'll find that the story that Michael is sharing about his childhood, about his dad who wasn't really in the picture, and his stepfather who nearly killed him, I think you're going to understand Michael from a different perspective and respect him even more deeply than perhaps you have before. I had a conversation with Michael on this very podcast a couple weeks ago, and listening to him talk with Julie just made me love and respect him even more. So enjoy Julie's debut episode, her first season episode 1 of Play Memory. And in the show notes, I've added a link to Julie's website where you can subscribe to her podcast, where you can leave her comments. Let her know on iTunes, please, what you think of her episode. It's important that you let her know the way that it reached you, and then also that you share it with others. So I do hope you enjoy this as much as I have. And actually, I can't wait to talk to you on social media about the way that this episode affected you like it affected me. So here it is, episode one of Play Memory with Julie Sternberg.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to the very first episode of Play Memory, a podcast about stories from childhood. This is Julie Sternberg. I'm the author of a number of children's books, including Like Pickle Juice on a Cookie and The Top Secret Diary of Celie Valentine. For this episode, I'm trying a different format than the one that I use for other episodes. It's a little bit of a nerve-wracking format for me, and I'll explain why. For other episodes, I am interviewing different children's book authors about the ways that the themes from children's books have played out in their lives. So, for example, I ask them, tell me about a secret from your childhood, and tell me about a time when you disappointed your parents, and tell me about a time when your parents disappointed you. So for this episode, I felt that it was only fair that I share a story like that from my childhood. And I decided that I would share a secret that I haven't told anyone for decades. I have not shared this secret with a soul until very, very recently, when I decided I was going to put it on the podcast and I'd better tell a few folks closest to me. So, episode one, Julie's Big Secret. This involves something that I did with a classmate from eighth grade. We were at a school called Episcopal in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Her name is Rebecca Rayner. Rebecca and I became friends when I started at Episcopal in seventh grade. And we were friends until this secret moment. And then we did not speak again in any meaningful way ever. And I haven't spoken to her at all for decades. But I got in touch with her on Facebook when I decided that I wanted to share this secret for this episode. And she agreed to talk to me for the episode. And our conversation is act one. After talking to Rebecca, I realized that this secret on some level is really small. That's something I kind of knew. I knew that it was a pretty small secret, but it affected me in a huge way. It had a huge impact on my life. And so I decided for act two to talk to a clinical psychologist, Dr. Karina Grossmark, who has researched and written about secrets. And together we tried to figure out why this secret impacted me in the way that it did. And then for act three, in a slight shift, I spoke to my fabulous editor, Liz Van Doren, about a behind-the-scenes story she has with respect to how a secret got into an award-winning children's book. And that secret shows, I think, the power of secrets to shape emotions and narrative. So it's pretty exciting, I think, this show today, even though it's pretty nerve-wracking for me. Here we go. Act one, reconnecting with a long-lost friend. I caught up with Rebecca one evening over Skype. Unfortunately, the audio of our call isn't perfect, but I think the sound is still pretty clear and you'll be able to understand everything. It turns out Rebecca has done some really interesting things as an adult. She's been a news anchor and a reporter. She's owned and been the president of a media company, and now she's a communications writer at the School of Nursing for UC Davis. From the moment that I met Rebecca until the day that we graduated from high school, she was always at the heart of the most popular group. It feels relevant to tell you that for some reason. And the other thing that I want to say is that whenever I have thought of Rebecca, whenever she's crossed my mind over the last 30 some odd years, the first thing that has popped into my head has been this secret moment. I wondered whether that was true for her too, and we talked a little bit about it. When I messaged you and said, I'd like to talk to you about something crazy involving the podcast. Did you know what I was going to ask you?
No idea.
No.
But I thought it might be something from my daughter's perspective, who has read some of your books. I actually thought it also might be from a communications perspective, just because, you know, my former career was spent talking. I had no idea that you would go back into the corners of my mind and pull out something that might kind of fall into one of those hazy moments of things that I don't have crystal clear recollection of.
It is so funny. Had you thought about this moment that I'll describe in a second since it, you know, in years and decades?
I can't tell you when the last time it may have even crossed my mind, to tell you the truth, which is horrible, but I
know. I don't think it's horrible. I think it's so admirable. Okay, so I should explain that when we were in eighth grade, we took a French exam at the same time, you know, with the rest of the class. And I'm pretty sure that I passed you a note asking you questions on this exam. And if my recollection, not that this matters, is that it wasn't our usual teacher in the room. I think it was the other French teacher for some reason covering this exam. Anyway, it doesn't matter. She caught us cheating. And my impression looking back on it now is I realize that that was a huge turning point for me because I completely withdrew from all of those friends that I had made. I am interested in whether or not that rings true to you, that I was sort of in the midst of all these friendships and then I just kind of wasn't.
It very much rings true. And what is interesting in the kind of the two divergent paths that we took, clearly it changed your course. For me, I'm guessing it was just another one of the many mistakes I would make. And I just kind of picked myself up, brushed myself off, and kind of moved on. And there were many more mistakes to follow, whether, you know, they were the cheating ones or the misjudgments. But I do recall, because I have photos somewhere, hard copy photos, along with the images in my mind of us dancing, singing the songs, wearing our jerseys, having so much fun, and then no more. And then you became a distant person. You delved into your books. You focused on your studies. You were always a friend, but it was more familial.
That's, you know, it's so funny because I think I just got so scared that somehow if I continued with friendships, my desire to keep all of these friendships would, I think I felt, obviously I'm susceptible to doing things that I know are wrong and feel bad about if I let myself be social. So it's not as if I didn't continue to make mistakes and have all sorts of misjudgments. I definitely did. But I, in that moment, just decided I was going to completely withdraw. And what's ironic is that I think I was trying to make it really small. I was trying to say, okay, we're just going to forget about that. We're not going to talk about it. It's just a little thing. In my mind, I was trying to make it tiny and make it go away. And in so doing, I ended up making it huge.
Yeah. But of course, now on the Monday morning quarterback, I want to look back and think that little secret, which was a secret, really, it festered and grew and it just took root in you. And I guess I skipped a beat and moved on, you know, to the next decision, the next mistake, or the next grade. And I'm fascinated with what was it in our psyche, in our personalities, and in, I think it probably goes back to family dynamics too. Why did we choose those two different paths?
I mean, the funny thing is that my parents never said another word to me about that experience. I think I cried so much and I was clearly beating myself up so much. They never punished me that I can think of. I mean, they must have done something. I don't know. And when I look back on it now, it was such a minor incident, really. I mean, when I confessed to my husband and I confessed to my children. They were like, okay, we don't care at all. But it, and I don't know, it was an eighth grade, you know, French exam. It had no impact on my final grade. It had no impact on anything, but it changed.
Well, clearly it did.
Right, exactly. Except that it had impact on everything. I don't know. I do think I would have had a much happier high school experience. I really look back on that experience as being a very unhappy one, but it was a very productive one for me. You know, I did a tremendous amount of learning, not that I remember much of it.
You know, but it was the perfect alibi because I know that we missed you and you had gone on to loftier goals, and we always looked up to you and admired you for your dedication. Had we known that some of that dedication was rooted in whether it was, I don't know, was it embarrassment or was it just anger at yourself for making a misstep? I mean, I don't know what it was rooted in, but you definitely would have appeared more human. We would be like, yeah, she gets it too.
Yeah, I know. Rebecca told me, too, that in a bit of funny timing, her daughter came home very recently and complained that a kid in her class had tried to copy off her during a test.
I said, well, what did you do? And she showed me. You remember they all, you lean out on your desk and you put your arm out and you cup your hand.
I remember. I became the queen of that after our whole moment.
And the sad thing is that you're so focused on nobody looking and your face like inch or two from the text on the page. You're not focused on doing the best you can do with the hand because you're worried about all the, you know, peripheral things. And I said, well, just stay on the straight and narrow, but if you make a mistake, then you're going to have to live with the consequences. And that's which I wouldn't want the consequences to be as severe as yours, but right.
You know, it's going to haunt you for the rest of your life. Rebecca and I reminisced too about fun we'd had before the secret fiasco. Like the crushes so many girls had on two high school football stars, David and Neil Abramson, the Abramson brothers.
And do you remember the David Abramson song?
That we made up?
Well, we didn't really make up the song. We took a song and we used David's name in it. Do you remember? You're going to make me sing it.
Yes,
David, baby, I get down on my knees for you.
The Everly Brothers.
Do you remember that? On knees.
If you would only love me. Oh my gosh! Well, then I guess then the other ones must have sung it to Neil.
Yeah.
Did Neil have his own song?
I for some reason the Shasta theme song is coming to mind. Shasta, I want to kneel, I want to pow, something Shasta.
Oh my gosh.
I know the laughing and singing is a little ridiculous, but it was actually a pretty big moment for me because when I think back on my time at Episcopal, I always think of it as a pretty unhappy time. And it was so nice talking to Rebecca and remembering that there were actually happy times there, too. It was also just nice to catch up with her, and I'm so grateful that she agreed to do the podcast. Still, after our conversation, I wondered, why did this moment that we shared have such a different impact on the two of us? Why did I react so extremely? So for Act Two, I reached out to Dr. Karina Grossmark, a clinical psychologist who has researched and written about secrets. We talked about the significance of secrets and the impact that this secret had on me. So here we go. Act Two, Therapy on the Air. Dr. Grossmark started by talking about how important secrets are to our development and how secrets can help us create a private self that only we control. She used this story from developmental psychologist Dr. Jean Piaget to explain.
He talks about this kid who suddenly realizes that he lied and that his father didn't get it at all. He's not punished. The father didn't find out. And he talks about how this kind of, at the beginning of him having a sense of himself as separate, that he can have his own private world that is exclusive, and that he can choose to let people in or out.
So secrets help us create a private space that we control. But how do we choose what to make secret? Why did I choose to bury my cheating episode as a closely guarded secret when Rebecca didn't? And why can an objectively small moment, like my cheating moment, take on such weight? Why does my heart still race when I think about a French test that I took 30 years ago? With those kinds of questions in mind, Dr. Grossmark and I talked about secrets behind secrets.
We so many times think we keep it the secret, or we have a secret because of some particular reasons, but that we might not even know ourselves what is it that is so loaded about that and where it comes from. And one of the things I talked about in the paper is that even sometimes I feel there are so many layers that even come from different generations.
The layers of our secrets sometimes come from different generations. She doesn't simply mean how our parents treat us. It's not just how my parents reacted when they found out I'd cheated. She means something more than that.
I often even felt that, you know, things that we may not even understand about ourselves may even be part of our parents' history with their own grandparents, you know, unresolved issues that are almost transferred from even from generation to generation. And you see that so much in, you know, Holocaust survivors and not even, you know, people who have immigrated, and just things that are not resolved that need to either compensate it by doing something very different, but that you need to cover, but that come often not even only from you, but from your mother or your father or their history even.
It's telling for me that she mentioned Holocaust survivors. Not that I'm a Holocaust survivor, but I come from a Jewish family and my dad was born in Germany, and he and his parents and siblings fled from Germany in 1936 after the Nazis closed the public schools to Jewish children, and much of my extended family died in the Holocaust. It turns out Dr. Grossmark had a similar background, although, and this is very different from my family, her parents had tremendous difficulty talking about that past. She talked a little about how her parents' secrets contributed to a secret of her own.
Okay, I'll tell you my secret. My secret, I felt in school I was horribly ugly. Like no boy was going to like me. Like, horrible.
I just have to say, for the record, she's gorgeous. Okay, go ahead.
She uses glasses. But, you know, and it's a secret, and it's not gone entirely. I guess that's the part of secrets that I don't yet quite understand. I almost feel like they are such an integral part of who you are and how you perceive yourself that I think it's very hard to get into them and even give them a clear meaning that, you know, sometimes it's more clear than others, but like I feel that that is still a secret. Like, it's not entirely gone, even if I can think about it and think it's ridiculous. That it's almost like a part of you and how you experience yourself and your body. And
do you have any thoughts about sort of the secret within your secret, what that might be?
I think the fact that my parents had secrets certainly made me feel a certain kind of awkward, like there were things that you were not supposed to tackle or be free about, or, you know, and I think I felt awkward all my life almost, and very protective of them, and perhaps less focused on me.
As we spoke, I tried to figure out what the secret behind my secret might be. And I talked it through a little with Dr. Grossmark.
Maybe the actual secret was that I had cheated because I never told anyone.
Mm-hmm.
That the secret behind the secret was that I feared that my desire to be social and popular would cause me to do these bad things, mm-hmm. and that I couldn't control that mm-hmm. desire. And so I had to shut it all down. That was the secret behind the secret. And now I'm wondering whether... just to continue sort of the generational aspect, whether in some sense the fact that my family, that it was an immigrant family, that the rest of the family in Europe was destroyed, you know, mm-hmm. they were all killed, and we were sort of starting over, and that there was this pressure to really start over well mm-hmm. and survive and succeed because yeah. we were it.
Right.
That whether that was even more to the next layer of the onion. Mm-hmm.
I did not expect a note that I passed to Rebecca Rayner in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, in eighth grade, to have any connection to World War II. But it seems kind of fascinating that even those secrets we tell ourselves are small might be connected to our parents or our grandparents or even ancestors we've never met in ways that we don't even realize. And now it's time for the story of a different secret, a secret that was in the far reaches of another author's mind in a way that she didn't realize. It shows the power of secrets to shape emotions and narrative. So here we go. Act 3, The Storytelling Power of Secrets. My editor, Liz Van Doren, who's editorial director at Boyd's Mills Press, told me this story about the award-winning book Love, Ruby Lavender by Deborah Wiles.
Debbie and I worked on that book together for a very long time. And for the first maybe 2 years of that very long time, it was a really great story about two girls who really don't like each other. Really, really don't like each other. The main character, Ruby, and her nemesis, Melba Jane. And at a certain point, the first half of the book was fantastic, but the second half of the book just, it didn't feel like it delivered. And I said to Debbie, you know, I think one of the problems is I don't understand why Ruby Lavender and Melba Jane hate each other so much. And she kind of stopped and had to think about that for a really long time. And then what came to her, and writers always say this, and, you know, it's hard for other people to understand that this actually happens for a writer. What came to her in a dream was that each of them was keeping a secret, and it was about the same event. And the whole, this is a spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't read the book, but the whole, the center of the story, the emotional center of the story, is that there was a really bad accident in which Ruby's grandfather and Melba's father died, and each one blames the other for the accident. And the accident didn't exist in all of the early drafts of the story, and therefore their hatred of each other didn't have a reason for being. And when I asked that question, Debbie realized that the reason they hate each other is because they're each keeping a secret about blame and about this accident. And it completely changed the story. And so I feel like in that particular book, the secret is the foundation on which the entire story sits.
I'm interested in the peeling of the onion from a writer's perspective, because once she figured out, okay, they were keeping two separate secrets about the same event, how did she go about revealing that to the reader? How much do you keep and how much do you withhold?
What was interesting was that a lot of it was there, and she doesn't even realize it was there. Like, for example, she layered something in. Ruby lives just outside of town, and she runs to town every day to see her grandmother, who helps run the general store, but she never runs across the bridge. And the reason she doesn't run across the bridge is because the accident happened on the bridge. And so at first, Debbie had her not running across the bridge because it wasn't the fastest way into town. But then she sort of layered in, I think this is the way, if she listens to this, she'll probably say I remember it incorrectly, but it was something like this, that she layered things like that in. And then she added, there's this great scene toward the end of the book where they have a face-off on the bridge. It's kind of like a Western. It's fantastic. And so she took details and embellished them or deepened them or added to them to weave the story in. I mean, she believes, and I think that it's such a sort of a beautiful analogy for anyone writing a novel, that a novel is kind of like a quilt. And so that was adding stitches, that was bringing stitches in, and adding different pieces.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting too, with respect to secrets, I think, and what you were saying about how they affect emotions in such an all-encompassing way, is that sometimes it doesn't even matter so much what the secret is, or you can know that there's some kind of something going on, and you can have all of the emotions in place, and then at the end figure out exactly what's going on, and you don't actually have to make that many changes as long as you've gotten the characters and the emotions right throughout. So I'm thinking, for example, of the first Celie Valentine book, where Celie is in a big fight with her best friend Lula, and Lula's not talking to her, and there's something going on, and Celie doesn't know what it is, but she kind of knows. And I wrote, you know, 90% of that book having no idea what actually was going on with Lula. I had to decide that at the very end. And I had different theories along the way. And it, once I'd settled on it, it didn't require that many changes, because the emotions are the same and the consequences of the emotions are the same.
Right. It's like an outfit.
Right.
It's, you know, it is. Well, it's like the person is the same. You're just dressing them differently.
Right. Oh, yes. I see that now.
That's it. We've finished the first episode of Play Memory. I just want to thank a few folks. I want to thank Lionfish Music for our music. I want to thank Gordon Rothman, who's helped with sound. And I want to thank Dan Blank for being a sounding board for all of my thoughts along the way. I want to thank all of the folks who agreed to be interviewed for this episode. For more about me and my books, please check out www.juliesternberg.com. And now it's time to say goodbye. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk soon.
Well, this is the point when I usually hop on and say, did you like what you heard? Did you enjoy the episode? And I certainly hope you did. I hope you found Julie's content challenging and thought-provoking. I hope when you heard the talk about secrets, that just as I did, you thought about the way that withholding these secrets can ultimately change our life forever, can inform the people that we become. And that can be for the better, and it can be for our detriment. But it's always a choice, and it always affects us. So now I'm going to ask you to make a choice, and I hope you'll understand how it'll affect Julie's podcast as well, and in much smaller way than withholding a secret or sharing a secret, but in an important way nonetheless. And that is that you should go to iTunes, and if you enjoyed this episode, give it some stars or write a brief review about Play Memory. When you do that, it will help other people discover Julie's podcast. Another great option would be for you to go to www.juliesternberg.com and leave some comments about her episodes. That way she can hear from you. You know, podcasts are such a one-way conversation in that way that we who record the podcast don't often get to hear your reaction to it. So take a moment and share. I know she would love to hear from you. Thank you for allowing me to share this episode with you. And I look forward to bringing you more interviews in the future. Also with Julia, actually. It'll be great to have her on soon. But thank you for allowing me to share this thing that was very special to me and that I couldn't stop thinking about with all of you. And thank you again, Julie, for allowing me to share your episode as well. Good luck with this podcast. I know I will be listening to it faithfully. Have a great week, everyone. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.